Welcome to Marketing Made Clear. I'm your host, Will Green. Today's episode is a bonus episode which covers my recording of the wonderful Anna Webb. And as it's a bonus episode, it comes with a bonus theme. The episode will be structured with an intro, the recording itself with Anna, and then a bit of reflection at the end. And that's where I'll relate the conversation to other things that might be of interest.
Let's go.
Marketing Made Clear, we're here to educate. From beginners to pros, we'll elevate. Bringing the insights like a blazing spark. Together we'll conquer, leaving our mark.
I love myself a bit of marketing.
So, like I said, I'm really excited to have Anna on the podcast. And I know Anna as a canine expert, but it's fair to say she's actually a pet expert. She's been on ITV's Alan Titchmarsh show, Channel 5's Gabby Logan show, the Sky documentary A Different Breed. She's made contributions to Talk TV, GB News and LBC, and of course, BBC contributions on Radio 2, Radio 4, BBC Radio Scotland, London, BBC Local Radio and BBC Politics. And most recently, Anna's also appeared on The World Service. Anna's work on the BBC also includes her wonderful show with Joe Good called Barking at the Moon. And I have to say, I think that Anna and Joe make such a great duo. It's a great mix of entertainment and knowledge. I love the stuff that Anna's done with our very own Esther with Paleo Ridge. Anna's been kind enough to have me on her podcast a couple of times, A Dog's Life with Anna Webb. And I might be biased, but I think it's the best canine podcast out there. It's so diverse, and it covers all aspects of modern dog ownership, talking to scientists, experts who've changed and are changing our understanding of dogs. I discussed loads of stuff with Anna, and it starts with Anna kind of embracing social media, and there was this really hilarious thing that happened on Instagram Live with Esther and Anna, and Esther joined, and then some random woman joined who was sat in the back of a taxi. She seemed to have no idea that she was joined the Instagram Live, being streamed to thousands of collective followers. And Esther and Anna couldn't work out how to remove her, so they were trying to ask her to leave, but she just didn't seem to know what was going on. She just sat there in the back of a taxi, looking a little bit gormless. Esther and Anna kept it together somehow, I don't know how. And I was not particularly helpful, as I just found it all too funny, so I just watched on. But Anna talks a little bit about Mr. Binks, her English toy terrier that she takes absolutely everywhere with her, and he's awesome. She talks about A Dog's Life podcast, the wide range of guests and topics, and keeping the quality of guests up. It kind of goes without saying, but Anna is incredibly passionate about dogs. So if you're a dog lover, this episode will be especially entertaining, and you'll probably already know who Anna is then. Anna offers a fresh perspective, being from a media background, and mentions about the show Absolutely Fabulous in relation to PR. And I didn't actually quite get the reference at the time, but I didn't watch the show as much as my mum or sister. But the main character, Edina Monsoon, is a heavy drinking, drug abusing PR mogul who spends her time failing to lose weight and chasing bizarre fads in a desperate attempt to stay young and hip. But Anna had recently appeared on the Andrew Marr show as well, which she talks about, and also having a laugh with Jeremy Vine and interviews with Kay Burley. So, without further ado, here you go, here's Anna Webb.
No, good to be in touch, actually, you know, just generally. So, you know, I'm loving writing the blogs. And
you're keeping very busy.
Yeah, no, it is. Well, it's been, you know, running into Crufts was really busy, and then Crufts was March was really mad. Yeah, it has. It's good. I want to get some more sort of collaborations on the go, you know, as well. Some more dogs are beginning to come in. So I feel that's a combination of perhaps people are getting used to the cost of living crisis and the fact that my SEO rankings are now much higher.
So I'm talking about marketing anyway there.
Well, I don't know that. I need to do marketing, really. I was thinking on the walk today, I need to just brace myself and do these awful filming things on Instagram. Warning everyone,
It's difficult though, isn't it? I mean, because you don't want to do anything that isn't part of, like, that isn't true to you. But
yeah,
I tell you a guy I really like. There's a guy called Nigel Adkins. He's actually a football manager.
Right.
And but he is just, he's got an amazing story. He came from... he was like the physio of the football club. And then he went from being a physio to being a coach. And then he went from coach to being a manager. And then he went on and he's still a fantastic manager, but he's very well studied. He's very well read. And he used to do things like tell poems in the press conferences and stuff, which I just thought was like really kind of fascinating because it's very much not what you'd expect, you know?
Yes.
But he does a thing, he loves walking.
Right.
So he does posts every week where he goes for a walk. Yeah, he'll do a, I don't know, inspirational kind of talk, I guess.
Right.
Because his whole thing is to inspire people. And yeah, I really like them. I'm a big fan of him. He's a really interesting character. And yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay. Nice. Well, yeah, I take on board all these things because
perhaps
that's what I've got to do, you know.
I think you're doing everything right, honestly. Like, you know, it's kind of, you know, the fact that the TV appearances are amazing, like for authenticity and credibility and stuff, you know.
No, I know. The Kay Burley ones have been mad. I was so surprised. You know, they rang and it was all a bit sort of lastminute.com and everything. And then we were on the counter. So, gosh, you know, it's all that adventure is Mr. Binks going to jump off the edge. You know?
Yeah.
I had to keep my cool. Everything. At one point, I go, Binks.
Yeah. But that's part of that. I mean, again, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of this is like, you know, there's the news value and there's the entertainment value as well, isn't there? And that's, I think, the hard line to tread, really.
I know. Like back in the day, I think it was more entertainment led with me and Joe, but now it's got the substance. But
yeah,
and I'm so confident talking about it. That's not an issue for me. I'm so confident talking about everything and saying it in my own way from the heart because I really do have my perspective at the moment on what's going wrong out there in the world of dogs, just because. Yeah. Of, you know, my experience in the world of dogs, you know, all my life.
And everything, you know, things have changed. You know, I've done loads of the research, pet industry and all that kind of thing.
I still haven't gone back into it, Will. There was so much in there for me. Psychology degree, because that's where I channel my psychology degree initially into the media. And, you know, messages from different newspapers, how ITV would cover a story in the BBC. I mean, you know, we wrote essays on all of that. We're pressing.
You know, I just finished my MBA. I really love studying marketing and I'd love to study a DBA, which is Doctor Business Administration. But, you know, maybe sometime down the line I'll do that. What I want to do is continue my research and keep going with like learning marketing. I love psychology as well. I absolutely love applying psychology to marketing. And so that's something we've got in common for sure. Psychology side, especially, you know, the Maslow's, the Jung's, just applying models to marketing. I think it will keep me going and give me a different outlet. So I've got the website. Every time I want a podcast or anything, I put that up there. And for these podcasts, they're going to be like a lesson. Video as well, but like one thing at a time.
Yeah, video does add a whole massive extra dimension. Yeah, I mean, interestingly, so I've been invited on Victoria Stilwell's podcast tomorrow.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, so I'm recording. That's good. And that is with videos. I've been told to arrive camera ready and everything. And it does, it's great, but it is this, you know, phenomenon we're living in, isn't it? This Zoom culture, which in a way, a whole new marketing area, you know, all of the gadgets, all of the, you know, bits and pieces that you need to, everyone can create their own studio indoors, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the things like, you know, I'm editing on GarageBand, which is like very easy. It's a free bit of software that you get when you get a Mac. So, you know, you don't need the fanciest software. You know, I'd love to have that. And if things go well, I'll obviously kind of level everything up a little bit. I have got a nice microphone for the kind of main part of the podcast, and I've got my audio devices and stuff. But I think like anybody can really start a podcast. And I would say, well, I'll probably come on to how things will develop in the future.
I'm interested that you're using GarageBand because that's been on a Mac forever.
I know.
I've got it then, haven't I, on here? Because I do a bit more editing and stuff if I'm going to go a bit more, you know, spangly with the old Instagram social media. Because you might do a video that you love, but there's one bit and right in the middle, it normally is, that is absolutely awful. And I just want to cut that middle bit out and then switch the two other parts together. And that should be really, is that easy to do on GarageBand?
Well, if you wanted, I could do, in the future, I could do a lesson on GarageBand.
Oh, wow.
We could record it and make a video of it.
Yeah, okay. So, and then edit it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, great. Because sometimes, as we're talking about marketing and everything, you know, I mean, I'm, you know, obviously fairly old. So it's interesting how technology, you know, this world of tech is, I think, you know, good and bad in all walks of life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think in a way it could overcomplicate aspects of, you know, understanding marketing, really, you know, or perhaps overanalyzing stuff, because a lot of behavioral psychology, which obviously I've used a lot to work with dogs, features in a human psychology degree, you know, the behavior of buying, which I know in your amazing study you do feature a lot.
Consumer behavior, for sure.
Yeah.
And then obviously your wonderful show with Joe Good, Barking at the Moon, ever present, ever popular. I just think that you guys make a fantastic duo. Like, we're kind of starting to talk about this a little bit, just a great mix of kind of entertainment and knowledge that you guys have. So I'm a big fan.
Oh, that's so great to hear. No, we love the dog slot. I'm very proud of it, really. So, you know, it is 14 years old.
Really? Wow.
No, we started it. I'll never forget the day. It was January the 13th, which was a Thursday, thankfully, not a Friday. Auspicious. And that was in 2010.
Wow. Yeah. No, I mean, and I think things have changed massively over the 14 years in canine understanding of nutrition. And I think, like, all the science is there now to back up all the things that you've been saying for a long time.
Yeah. Well, that's why I did my study, so circa 2012 to 2014, to qualify me, I suppose, really, to actually speak about everything, you know, I was speaking about. Because back then I wasn't actually focusing solely on dogs. You know, I was working in the media in other sectors, because dogs were the fun aspect. You know, dogs weren't me. A way of thinking of my main income in my life, you know. I think there's always a fine line with that, actually. So for dogs have always been a passion for me, a huge interest, a life massive enhancer, you know. And that was encouraged by my father, really, and one of my aunties, Aunt Pip, who used to take me to Crofts every year when I was as young as 8. So I know. So I was really, that was an interest to me. So I learned all the breed dogs. I could walk people around Crofts and do a tour. Well, that is a German short-haired pointer. But bearing in mind how young I was, I think it was quite impressive to some grown-ups.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think so. And I think, in fact, our own Collade at Paleo Ridge, he's got an amazing knowledge of dogs. And we didn't know where that came from, but apparently he used to study like a encyclopedia when he was younger, to just to learn the different breeds. Maybe we have to get you guys talking about that sometime.
I don't think I've met him, have I?
Yeah, Kalani's great fun. He turns up for a couple of days at Crofts,
just
smiles the whole time.
Well, you know, that takes something on, that takes a very specific interest, you know.
Yes.
But I think that's a really healthy thing to have in life, you know. And indeed.
Yeah. And obviously, I love everything that you do with Esther, our very own Esther at Paleo Ridge, and you guys make another great duo, I think. And I have to say, I did really enjoy the episode that you did on Instagram when somebody joined from a tag team.
Oh, yeah, that's
you kept it together so well. I thought that was amazing.
Oh, don't. Yeah, that was an Instagram live. You see, that's where I go back to technology. I find technology hinders me, you know, because you've got to learn how to use it. I love all the effects of it, and I quite like to do it, but it's, you know, I wish someone could just do it all for me. But I suppose that's a bit, that's aspirational, a bit like with you, maybe one day. You know what I mean?
For the time being, we have to do it ourselves, don't we?
We do.
It's part of the passion, though, isn't it? And
yeah,
and I have to like really get onto the. I mean, you've been kind enough to have me on your podcast, A Dog's Life, which I think is I am biased, but I think is the best one, the best kind of canine related podcast. It's kind of so diverse, I think, with the guests that you have on there. And I was looking, you've had over 200 episodes now. I think getting up to about 210 episodes.
You're right, we are. I mean, it's extraordinary, really. It's just, well, it's we launched just before the pandemic, but of course at that crux of 2020, but nobody knew, obviously, what was ahead. So
yeah.
In a way, it was great to have launched it then because it was a wonderful project through certainly the first year and then onwards. And it's gained momentum, you see, that it has. And we do get a decent load of downloads, you know, about 6,000 odd a month. It's not bad, but then a lot of work's gone into that, you know, pushing the podcast, talking on your Jeremy Vine shows and being introduced as a host of a Dog's Life podcast.
Yeah.
So it's kind of become this massive mission for me, you know, and it's great. And it is paying dividends, I think, now, you know, and I'm very proud of it. And I'm proud of the diversity. Sometimes I think I might go off subject a little bit, or I think it's very important to keep true to yourself and the path that you want to go on with the podcast. And keeping the quality of the guests right up there is also important. But, you know,
you've had some amazing guests on there. Like, me, obviously.
Well, you obviously, Esther, obviously. No. I mean, that goes without saying. Yeah. But I mean, the one that's dropping on Sunday, it's good. It's hot because we're talking about the latest changes to the vaccination guidelines by the World Small Animal Veterinary Association.
Yeah.
It literally dropped about 4 days ago. So it's hot. So that I think is really interesting because I am passionate about dogs' health, really. That's the main driver, and behavior, of course, as well. But I think, you know, you can't have good behavior without good health, and you can't have good health without good behavior.
Yeah. But my thought was really there couldn't be that many other hosts of that podcast because to have the media experience that you have and, you know, your contact list and your knowledge that you have with canine nutrition, like with, you know, overall well-being for dogs and everything, you've got a very kind of wide and deep knowledge base. So couldn't be many others.
No, thanks. Well, yeah, you know, I really, really love dogs, you know, and I've always been interested in human nutrition. And I was very interested when I took Molly on in 2002, my first dog as a grown-up, how our neighbour, who's called Toby, he had a bull terrier. And that was where I got my real interest to bring a bull terrier into my life when my dad died. Anyway, I looked after him for a few weekends, and the first time I did it, you know, Toby said, right, this is how I feed Bill, and he got a scoop, you know, and he filled it up with some kibble and just tipped it into his bowl, and I went, what's that? I said, and he said, oh, this is how you feed dogs now. I went, really? And anyway, I did what I was told, obviously, because he wasn't my dog, and then Molly came along, and lo and behold, there was all this biscuit being given to me and then all the rest of it, and I was just like, no, hang on a minute, dogs don't eat this. I'm not sure about this. This all seems a little bit too processed for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a fan of processed food myself at all. And so I just went back to basics, what I'd learned, you know, through the family as to how to feed. And it was a breeder that stressed I must feed her on raw green tripe specifically. Yeah. So I went on this absolute mission to find where you could buy it, because back then in 2002, there were only two places.
Yeah.
In the UK, you see. Yeah. So it's interesting, you know.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think with a lot of things in life at the minute, we need to look back a bit, you know. I think we need to think.
Sustainability is one main thing, isn't it? You know, looking at some of the practices going back 50 to 100 years ago are much more sustainable than they are now.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, so much less processing of everything, you know, not only food, medication as well. And, and you know, no choice, you know, you had one or two Well, there, the Raw Green Tripe example is a perfect example. There were two suppliers of it. Yeah. I mean, now, roll on 22 years after that, I don't know, there's lots of suppliers of Raw Green Tripe, definitely more than two that I can think of straight away. So that's changed for a start. So I think, you know, do you feel, Will, sometimes in life there's too much choice?
I guess the way that I see it is that you see changes in the market and you would get lots of choice develop, and then you would go through a place where, because there's too much choice, you've got too much product or, you know, too many things available, and you'll get a period of consolidation where, you know, not everybody will survive. That's kind of, for me, like part of the good part of being in a, you know, an economy, being in a capitalist economy, I guess, you know, you will naturally get companies or products that do better than others. And it's the strongest survive, isn't it? But yeah, no, I think what I wanted to say, coming back to the podcast, is that appearing, I wouldn't be doing this podcast if I hadn't have been on yours, 100%.
That's great. Thank you.
It's really, really inspired me to... you know, to do this. And the thing that I'm really enthusiastic about is marketing, although it's kind of business as well, and, you know, the wider part of business, but my specialism is marketing. And I think it's really interesting, and there's a lot of marketing that happens that people don't really realize that they're doing a marketing activity. I think it's really relatable to think of what marketing is, and people can sometimes get a bit worried about, oh, I can't do this. I can't do this marketing activity. I can't do this or that. But because basically, you know, it seems a bit confusing. So thus the name Marketing Made Clear, trying to make it a little bit more relatable. But yeah, like I said, I wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for being on your podcast, and you've definitely inspired me to do this. So,
thank you for the compliments. But I think it's, I've always loved talking, funny enough.
Yeah.
So for me, speech is a really important asset that we've got. You know, if you think dogs don't speak in the same way that humans do. And I just feel it's a bit sad at the moment that we're not maximizing speech more. You know, I never just ring someone up for a chat like we used to do not that long ago. It seems like that's a taboo now, you know, so that's where I feel podcasts are really coming into their own.
Yes.
Because they're allowing the voice to come through and let the brain listen to voices and think, you know, which is why, if I'm to believe the stats, I mean, you might know the latest ones, but, you know, podcasts have 5 times more brand retention capacity than any other form of media.
That's kind of the same as the stats that I've seen. But the other thing is also that people are moving away from having the time or patience to read news stories or pages on your website. So you need to take that content and, you know, for companies, you need to take that content and make it more accessible for people. And one of the forms that everybody's seeing companies moving towards is podcasts. So basically taking their website and putting it into a podcast.
Yeah, it's great. Well, this is like a feature article. So I also see podcasts like the new features, like you can you know, because you can multitask with podcasts. That's the main thing, you know. And for me, it's great when I'm doing my consults. You know, I will send episodes that are relevant to the particular person I'm speaking to you about, say, vaccinations or about water feeding or whatever it might be.
Sorry to interrupt, but that's like building up a picture of, you know, your business model. The Anna Webb business model is, you know, your TV appearances and radio shows, and but particularly the TV appearances as being Anna Webb from The Dog's Life, and then the Dog's Life helping your consultations and all sorts. So it all kind of feeds into each other, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so, because I do feel where the podcasts are useful when you're doing a consultation is, you know, for example, you know, switching to Raw, somebody might have had a lot of conflicting advice, you know, advice from their vet which might be saying something completely different. I'm sort of saying, no, you know, don't listen to your vet. And then they're thinking, well, who are you? You know, so I'll say, well, look, I'll send you a couple of episodes by some of the most, you know, internationally acclaimed vets in the world. And you're getting a vet consult for free, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so it's like an extra to listen to someone like Dr. Jean Dodds, for example, speak about generation immunity on vaccines. Yeah. Well, she knows. She created the duration of immunity. You know, her 50 years in vet practice has really, you know, changed the world, really. You know, she's made a massive impact. So that's where it's fun. And also, you know, for me, I just, I want to help people. Only a dog isn't as straightforward as people might think, you know, there's, and you need to find your path, as I was saying to someone the other day. And I like to hope to help people find their path to a long, happy, healthy, you know, as long as possible life as you can.
Yeah, no, definitely. And so on the marketing side, marketing for me includes PR. I know this is actually something you're quite knowledgeable about.
Yeah.
Especially PR.
Yeah, especially PR. Well, I was always fascinated by PR, you know, when I was at Oxford Poly doing my degree and everything. I just loved it, whether it was a bit inspired by Absolutely Fabulous, I don't know, you know. But, you know, I just loved the idea of just creating noise around whatever it would be, you know, and I enjoy the press and the whole way the media works. And it's something I've learned a lot about over the years from being on, if you like, a bit on both sides of the fence. I mean, way back actually, Will, I did study, I don't know if it's still going. I mean, I would have done this in about 1988, maybe 89. It was called the CAM certificate, which was Communications, Advertising and Marketing.
Ah, okay.
And it was a diploma, so I've got that. But it was so long ago that I did it. And it was way before any digitalization had occurred, you know. So I used to go to this college just off the Euston Road, and it was paid for at the time by EMAP, who I was working for. And that was great. And it kind of channeled a lot of the psychology I'd not long studied, obviously, at that point, into things like brands, you know, like, what does this brand have? And, you know, and the differences between communication, advertising and marketing, because all of them are slightly different.
I think there's another maybe ahead of your time, because the amalgamation of psychology into, you know, marketing is really the, you know, say Professor Belk in 2010, but that kind of era is where really we've seen some of the newest models that we're using now in marketing to understand consumer behavior is where that's where it's kind of really come to the fore. So that, you know, that kind of period, that late 80s, early 90s was kind of just a little bit before some of the other things that in consumer behavior that have developed. I've got a massive interest in psychology, like I said, because it helps me to understand consumer behavior a little bit better. And I find like the models that you learn really, you know, really help to understand things. So on my podcast, I will be going into those a little bit more in the future. But, you know, I want to start at the base level, which is kind of marketing and PR. But I imagine you said that because you've peeked behind the curtain for various like kind of media channels. Like, I mean, has that helped you with your perspective on how to approach things in terms of, I guess, PR or a marketing campaign?
Well, most recently, you know, I'm being employed to be, sometimes being employed to be as like a spokesperson for a brand and to, you know, go and talk about a subject and build in segue slightly to the brand. I mean, when you're on the media, you, like a broadcast media, you are limited to actually say the brand name only once. That's the rule, for example, on the BBC. So when we get contributors on that do want to, it might be a vet talking about flea treatment, the fleas, and then mentioning, you know, a brand, in, you know. So you have to watch that these people don't try and take the Michael, as it were, you know, and push it too far.
What can you actually do about that, though, if they're, I mean, not inviting back, I guess, but...
Well, no, that's that. And, you know, the thing is, when people re-listen, you see, what I've also learned about broadcast media is that less is more.
Yeah.
It's interesting. And it is more about this art, which is show, don't tell. And that's, and I know, like, often when I'm writing, you know, the writing process can take quite a long time. You'll write down your initial kind of skeleton piece and then you'll reread it and you just think, well, that's a load of rubbish. Well, you know, you don't think that, you think, hang on, it's boringly written. So you've got to turn it right round so that you are showing rather than telling. I think that's a very key mantra.
Yeah.
Show, tell. Yes. And to, you know, bite-size sound bites is what I'm looking for, say. I mean, the sound bite recently, you know, that certainly got Andrew Maher really, really laughing on LBC, which took me by surprise because I actually didn't think it was that funny, but it was probably because I knew what I was going to say. But we were talking about the Dachshund and the item before had gone on a bit, so I had to be quite quick. So you've got to keep an eye on the time. And this is something I do really badly, keep an eye on the time. So I have to somehow have a big clock doing a broadcast airing, you know, it's 3 minutes and that just goes, you can't think, oh, I want to build in this or go back in time. From which I deduce this information. Can't go there at all. So with Andrew, I just said, as it was the first broadcast about Germany potentially banning the Dachshund, you see, just 2 weeks ago. So he came on and he said, Germany, you know, banning it, Anna. And I just go, well, Andrew, the situation is with, I said, Andrew, it's all about there being too much sausage and not enough dog. Well, he wasn't expecting it. And we were on Zoom and he just knocked back. He was there laughing so much. So then I kept talking, you see, and I went, well, by that I mean, their backs are too long and their legs are too short. Well, that made it worse. So he'd obviously cut his mic because he was laughing so much. So I just had to then improvise and do a little dance around the Dachshund. So they're great badger dogs and it'd be such a shame for the iconic, you know, national breed of dog, you know, and then you've got scrupulous breeders and you've got unscrupulous breeders and it's really quite a complicated subject, Andrew. And then he obviously managed to come back up for air and he cut in and I was so relieved. And that was very, very funny. And then his producer came on after and she was still laughing 3.5 minutes later. And then I got really worried about it because I thought, oh no, the whole of LBC and thousands of Londoners are laughing at me. And it was just quite a big reaction to get. But it did remind me, though, that something that I feel is lacking a bit at the moment is the sense of humour about things.
Yeah.
I think everyone's too afraid to crack a joke.
But it's also about, there is a dilemma with doing something like a podcast, for instance, because, you know, we all have our reputations and the idea is to build, you know, that it should help to build a reputation. So then to be a bit silly, perhaps, or like to introduce comedy into it, which is something that I really want to try and do in my podcast, is to make them fun or funny. I always say that, you know, the listeners will be the judge of that. But it's also a thing you still want to be taken seriously in your day job. And so it's a difficult balance there, isn't it?
It is a difficult balance. I do get that. It is a difficult balance. So, I think you have to think about it.
Tread a line.
Tread a line. Yeah, but I have people have said to me, Anna, that you always inject a bit of humour. It's by accident. It's not because I don't ever script myself. I'm definitely going to say, I'm just going to, you know, because you get there and then you're with another person in real life. And they lead it, so it's kind of in a way easy. You just have to follow, but you've got to be on the ball. I mean, with Jeremy Vine, for example, we always have a giggle. He's got a great sense of humour. Yeah. And I think he likes me going on because he does pull my leg.
Yeah.
You know, if I can.
It's a difficult job, isn't it, being a host of a radio show, to then, you know, you feel that time to take it in a certain direction. Yeah, I think sometimes, I mean, it seems to me, I've never been that side of the microphone, let's say, but it seems like, you know, you want to keep that energy in the show. You want to try and make it as entertaining as possible with while sticking to the topics or the flow that you're going for.
Yeah, there's always got to be substance. And so once you get the substance points over, I think, you know, delivering it with, you know, an intelligent piece of humour that certainly isn't laughing at anyone and definitely never laughing at dogs if you're talking
about them.
You know, that's the key thing, and you're not being, you know, rude. But, you know, conveying something with a sense of humour, I think it's always a good idea. I mean, I referenced something about the price of vet bills, actually.
Yeah.
And, comparable. Well, I compared them to a pint of milk to bring it right back to the cost of living crisis, because everyone can identify with the old pint of milk. Yeah. And that was well received, because it was very, very clear. So, yeah, sometimes you have to think a bit. But, yeah, I mean, PR is so important. I just think PR, public relations, you know, coined PR, because what it's relating to your
So one thing I would say about PR is that I've always been taught from a educational perspective to focus on the hook. And, yes, you want to get your company out there and you want to get exposure. You want to get that reach, you want people to know who you are. And so a press release or like a press campaign should have a hook. And I guess that's kind of what you're saying as well, you know, where you would segue onto things, but you would have a topic that you're talking about. The topic might be the hook. And then, you would try and include the brand on that. It's all good fun. It's a fine art. And it's one of those things that is quite misunderstood, I think, by a lot of companies.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's always been considered a bit of a black art.
Well, so you say that. I mean, where does PR end and where does propaganda start?
Well, that's another whole aspect, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's where, I mean, certainly in the dog food industry, I think you do see quite a lot of propaganda flying around at certain times. You know, where certain research is blown out of all proportion and turned into this, like, you know, grenade that hits the press that everyone, you know, often based on fear, actually, you know, scaremongering. That's a tactic as well that's used quite a lot.
No, I was going to say on that, I'm actually doing an episode, one of the episodes, Why Do People Hate Marketers?
didn't think they did. I think, you know, marketeers and media people, if you like, coin a sort of phrase, they're great, you know, they're great fun, very busy, very, you know, off to the next thing, very much. But then your paths might, you know, come round again, and it is, about having contacts, thinking of ideas as well to pitch to relevant types of media. That's also, I think, really key, the right pitch and the right...
I mean, it comes down to perspective. You've got a very balanced perspective there. I think some people hate marketers because of, like, misinformation, and there's misinformation over the years. I think, again, like, even in my first episode when we're talking about marketing means different things to different people, because you take the perspective of where you're looking at marketing from. I tend to be looking at marketing as an activity to sell a product or something that, you know, that I'm promoting. But in other cases, I'm the customer or I'm the potential customer. So I'll view marketing in a very different way. I think when you've sat on both sides of it, you see it from a different perspective, don't you? I think you have sat on both sides of it. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think some messages I might not like at all, the product that's being advertised on telly. It's not going to be something I'd ever buy or anything, but I like their advert. I think, oh, that's clever. You know, it might make me smile, but then we're going back to humour again, and we mustn't forget that humour is a big way of communicating to people. That's why, you know, so we mustn't lose that, I don't think. And I think the people that can integrate some humour appropriately into campaigns are going to be the winners, you know, stand out from the crowd.
Yeah, humour. I think, like, feeling is a huge thing. That was a big change with marketing in the 50s. So it went from, you know, everything was sold from the specification of the product. And even cigarettes, you know, you look back to then and it was sold, you know, this is the cigarettes that doctors smoke and stuff like that, you know, which is crazy now. But then they you know, I don't know if you've ever seen the program Mad Men.
I was just about to bring this up. Yes,
yeah.
I love, Oh my God, I was
totally
pregnant. It's absolutely, you know, amazing. I adored it.
Yeah, I love that. And they show how it changed from being about, say, what specifications of the product are, what maybe even they were focusing on unique selling points, but then how does it make you feel? And that was a big change in the 50s, but like changing from, you know, just this is the best thing about this for this reason. And Veblen goods, like that goes back to the 1920s. So, you know, goods that you wanted to show off. So you'd wear a particular brand because that's part of how you want it to be perceived. And yeah, getting into psychology there, but
absolutely. And yeah, the message about yourself that you want to, you know, brand association is really good. Yeah, no, I think we're really on message. I don't know, guide me, Will. Guide me.
Yeah, like, yeah.
You know,
well, I'll be doing a few episodes on it. So yeah, I'll have to get your thoughts on them when they're out there, especially about consumer behaviour. I think it's just the most fascinating topic in marketing for me, I think.
Well, it's interesting. I think marketing at the moment, we're living in such a bizarre world, you know, because we are all driven by the cost of living at the moment. So that's going to, you know, guide your purchasing and what you buy. So, you know, that's obviously, you know, a bit different to a few years ago. So there's all these different cycles, isn't there, going on, and obviously sustainability.
Like fashion.
But now with climate change and everything, that's now a massive aspect that 20 years ago it should have been, but it wasn't. And that's why it's now even more important now, you know. Yeah. So I think there's, you know, global contributions to marketing and messaging that has to be factored in, you know, as well.
Definitely. Yeah. I guess, so one of the questions I had is, it was January 2020 when you first started the podcast. And like I said, you've done 210 episodes. That's 4 years of podcasting, and you've averaged a podcast every week. So I've kind of got like two questions, which is, one, how do you cope with that level of momentum that you have to do that? And the other question is also, what was it like moving from radio into podcasting?
Okay, so really the podcasting was a natural progression from having done the radio. Having talked to a lot of the people over the years, 14 years radio slot, you know, it was easy to get some really key guests. Like my first episode is Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, you know, one of, you know, my heroes. He's really influenced, you know, my thoughts on animal communication, not in the sort where you look at a crystal ball, but the thought where you are tapping into telepathy and, you know, and intentions. But Rupert Sheldrake, amazing. So, and fine-tuning, you know, my questioning. I think you become a bit obsessed. You know, I've recently watched Scoop on Netflix, going COVID. Have you watched it yet?
I haven't, no.
Well, Emily Makeless interviewing Prince Andrew. And it's good, actually. And like going through the questions, it's really interesting from a production point of view. You know, what if he comes back with this? Well, then you're going to have to go back with that. Not that any of my interviews have been that sort of a scale, but, you know, planning questions is always something that's quite a challenge, and you get a bit, I think, obsessed with them, and you want to keep your question actually as short as possible, and you want to get that question that's short to give a really long answer. You know, that's the way. Certainly Kay Burley, for example, she doesn't really ask you questions. She just throws in little talking points.
Yeah.
Or only on the twice I've done an interview with her, it's very, very, very subtle. So it's interesting to people. So tuning a craft, you know, keeping up with it. Yes. Well, lots of people, you know, want to be on the podcast. So, you know, it's about, I think, keeping the theme and the narrative of the podcast strong on wellness, because it is such a big area now. You know, over 12 years ago, no one knew what a naturopath was. But now more and more people are interested in longevity dog and looking at natural solutions. So I think it's just about you know, balancing it, going with the world of dogs that I've known and loved all my life, and building those key points in, as well as, because the dog hasn't changed. What's happened is we've changed, I think, through all of this and this onslaught of technology, but dogs haven't. So dogs are how they've always been. And I think that's, they are our main, I see almost, our main resource to keeping our humanity. There you go. That was profound. But I really do believe it. I really do believe that. You know, my dad said to me, Anna, you always know where you are with the dog.
Yeah.
And you know what? That is so true.
Yeah.
You do. And that's very reassuring. To answer your question, it is really hard work, a weekly podcast. Yeah. But I don't know. I like this. I do the radio. It's been weekly, what, for 14 years. You know, we had this blog, a column in The Independent for most of that time that was weekly. Yeah. So it's just about having a structure, I suppose. But, you know, making sure that you can fit everything in.
I mean, that's the thing that I'm finding tough already. I guess, like, I always saw that there'd be a move from radio into podcasting would be quite a natural progression. I think for me, going from predominantly writing academic articles or academic based research projects or something like that, it's quite a different type of move. I've noticed in the editing side how many times I say and all that.
Everyone does. No, that is the area to really, really control. And that's where sometimes where you're having a long chat, that's when actually more of them can come out.
Yeah. So
if you're doing a very short 4-minute interview, you haven't got time to go, you've got to have your subject totally in your head. You don't know which way it's going to come out, but it's going to come out. And fast. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
Your sound that you've got in your head.
One of the things that you realise, I guess, doing presentations, I've done a lot of presentations to big retailers and big stakeholders. And one of the things I always say is, you know, you have to be very, very prepared. And that, to me, goes into podcasting, to everything. I actually, you know, even though sometimes I make things up on the fly for the podcast, I write it down. Yeah, I mean, do you have any other advice really for me, or any words of encouragement for going forward with this podcast?
Well, I think this is great, because I think it's just great to talk and talk to people, get different people's views. And it's all this melting pot that, you know, your listeners will be able to listen, you know, to gain just nuggets. I've learned far more over the years from learning to the radio, learning listening even to the radio a lot, which I do. So yeah, words of encouragement. I think it's just really great that you're doing this. And I think people are going to love listening to an eclectic, you know, audience of, you know, experts, semi-experts sharing ideas on what is marketing and marketing to PR, PR to marketing. And what it all means, really, because it's all communication. The thing everything has got in common, whether it's an article, a podcast, an advert, is it's communication.
Definitely. Oh, well, thank you.
And amazing. Yeah. Well, I really hope I contributed to something there.
Yeah.
It just felt like a really nice chat. But
yeah, definitely. Well, thanks very much. I really appreciate it.
That's all right. Well, I hope we did do PR justice. I think.
I really appreciate it. Thanks, Anna. And honestly, you know, absolutely did inspire me to do this, so thank you for that as well.
No, it's great. I think podcasts are really good.
Yeah.
I really do. So, you know, look, brilliant. And yeah. No, I think you're doing great, and I hope we can get together again soon.
Okay, I've cut there because we go on to speak about a bunch of Paleo Ridge stuff, which isn't as interesting for other people, I don't think. But massive thanks to Anna for appearing on the pod. So apologies for the sound on this episode, you live and you learn. But like I said previously, I've been trying a few different platforms out to edit the podcasts on. And I actually recorded the interview initially on Teams with Anna, because I'd set up the interview on Google Hangouts, but it wasn't recording properly. So we had to quickly revert to a platform that I knew, which was Teams. So when it came to editing, I actually edited the podcast after speaking to Damo, which is going to be a separate episode from Audio Audit, so that I thought I'd give Riverside a go for the editing. And on balance, it was really good, and it helped me because I thought it was really interesting to be able to edit the podcast in a kind of word processing style. I tried a few of the other tools which didn't work quite as well, I have to say, Riverside does have some really cool tools that analyse the waveforms and the transcriptions to then enable you to use some very quick edits to your recording. This obviously uses some form of AI. And some of these tools are a massive time saver, but others I had a few issues with when I used them. So the first tool was called Set Pace, and it gets rid of long pauses, and you can set the length of pause to remove. I tend to set this kind of in the midway point, and that works really well. The second tool called Magic Audio generally enhanced the audio, which was useful, and I'm not sure exactly what this did, but I think it was some dynamic compression and noise gating and a bit of EQ. But the final tool was called Smooth Speech, which was used to remove ums and other unnecessary joining words, and this is the one that I had issues with. I think, as with a lot of platforms, speech recognition is built on people with an American accent, so with my silky British accent, I can come a bit unstuck. And when it analysed the recording to delete these joining words, it cut lots of words that had R's and ums in it. So, as an example, Birmingham would become Birmingham, Orchestra would become Orchestre. And when I exported the audio out of Riverside, it offered some audio normalising and mastering processing, which was really good. Then after I exported it all, I had to drop it back into my DAW, or Digital Audio Workstation, which is currently GarageBand for me, so that I could make some final edits and mix everything into the final episode. I then had some weird issue where I went back into it and it had clipped some of the audio, so I had to actually edit the audio twice, which was really quite time consuming. But please do check out Anna Webb on her social media channels and subscribe to A Dog's Life podcast, which is really awesome, especially if you're a dog lover and interested in learning more about a naturopathic approach to caring for your dog. Anna also writes blogs on the Paleo Ridge website, which are really informative and worth a read. Anna refers to a study at some point that I conducted, and this study is actually a study on the dog food market with a focus on the growth of raw dog food. It focused on consumer behaviour and the motivations behind people getting a dog and how that affected how people feed their dogs as well. The background of the study included a lot of work researching the field of psychology and applying it to dog ownership, so I used a lot of consumer behaviour models there. I'm definitely thinking about trying to translate that into some sort of podcast. I don't really know how though. If it's something you'd like to hear, please do give me a shout and I'll see if I can make it work. Anna loves to talk about psychology and she knows so much about that kind of thing, so it's such a pleasure to talk to her. But I guess we have to be a little bit careful sometimes because the dog food industry in particular is fairly fraught with issues around companies promoting products that are not really what dogs should be eating. And obviously, for full disclosure, I work for a raw dog food company, but the whole experience has been a complete eye-opener to me. The growth of the raw dog food industry has come in parallel with a move to people eating a healthier diet and avoiding highly processed foods. And it's kind of strange that the dog food market has found itself in the place that it is. But I think dog owners kind of sleepwalked into accepting kibble as an acceptable way to feed your dog. We're certainly seeing that challenge recently with the growth of raw dog food and other more natural forms of food for your dog. And yes, I've talked about it a lot in the podcast, but I studied an MBA, which is a Master's in Business Administration. And I'd previously studied a Master's in Marketing. And I kind of want to do a doctorate in Business Administration one day, but I really want to keep my marketing knowledge at the cutting edge. So one of my motivations behind doing the Marketing Made Clear podcast is to keep my research side moving. Because I feel like if I don't do that, I'm not going to be the best marketer I could be. And then I also get to speak to wonderful people like Anna about topics that I'm really interested in. I'm a really massive fan of Nigel Adkins, so if you know him or are listening to this podcast, please feel free to put us in touch and I would love you forever. So as Anna said, she appeared on the Victoria Stillwell podcast, who is the world-renowned dog trainer from It's Me or the Dog. And just to show you how long ago I recorded this interview with Anna, the episode that she had appeared in was published on the 23rd of April, titled All Things Dogs with Anna Webb. So give that a listen. Anna mentioned superstitions over Friday the 13th, and I'm fascinated by people's superstitions, Friday the 13th being a really common one. And it comes from a few different backgrounds, including Norse mythology, where 12 gods were having a banquet in Valhalla when the trickster god Loki, the 13th guest, arrived uninvited. Loki caused the death of Balder, the beloved god, leading to widespread mourning and a belief that 13 people at a gathering is bad luck. Then in Christian tradition, at the Last Supper, 13 individuals were present, including Jesus and 12 apostles. Judas Iscariot, who betrayed Jesus, was the 13th guest. Additionally, Jesus was crucified on a Friday, which compounded the belief that Friday and the number 13th were both unlucky. Then the most common one that people know about is with the Knights Templar. I think it's thanks to Dan Brown. But on Friday, October the 13th, 1307, King Philip IV of France ordered the arrest of the Knights Templar. This violent crackdown included torture and execution, cementing the date's association with bad luck and misfortune. Then in the media, Thomas W. Lawson's novel Friday the 13th in 1907 tells the story of a stockbroker who exploits the superstition to create chaos on Wall Street. Additionally, the Friday the 13th film franchise, which began in 1980, has significantly contributed to the widespread fear and cultural impact of the date. Finally, in numerology, the number 12 is often considered complete. For example, 12 months of the year, 12 zodiac signs, and so on, making 13 seem irregular and incomplete, thus unlucky. So it's a bit of a tangent, but I think it's really interesting. Anna says that she's a technophobe, but I don't think that's true. Anna embraces technology and things like social media way more than I think that she lets on. And everything is relative. AI is challenging the norms at the moment, so people like me that are 10 to 20 years into their careers are having to relearn how to make the most of the tools that are available to us. I've been on a Dog's Life a few times, so please do check out those episodes. If you go on my website, marketingmadeclear.com, and look at the news stories, I put each episode up there that I appear on. It was really interesting to hear Anna speak about the place that she sees podcasts take with a reduction in people speaking on the phone. It's kind of similar to what I was talking about with Ray from In That Number, about with podcasts taking place in people's lives where they can't go to the football anymore. But Anna's point was more about hearing voices. So I suppose that is related to replacing social interactions that are lost due to cultural changes. And as Anna said, podcasts have 5 times more brand retention than any other form of media. That's why at Paleo Ridge, we've embraced the podcasting early doors, seeing it as a great way to engage with customers. And podcasting fits into Anna's business model in a really organic way, with her radio work, consultations with dog pet owners, media appearances and thought leadership writing. These elements all complement each other, and each area helps to grow other areas in a kind of symbiotic way. It's much better than operating in a totally disconnected field, trying to spin completely different plates at any given time. And Anna said that she studied a CAM certificate, a CAM certificate. So just a little background on that. The Communication, Advertising and Marketing Education Foundation is a charity that was founded in the 1960s and is now a 100% subsidiary of the Chartered Institute of Marketers, the CIM. The CIM portfolio of digital marketing qualifications were withdrawn from the market in 2016, but the qualification continues within the kind of CIM certifications. As Anna said, she's a spokesperson for various companies, and this started me off on another rabbit hole. But there are actually companies out there that help other companies hire spokespeople, and this includes finding celebrities to represent your brand. I can't help but think of some crazy scenarios where companies were to hire a completely obtuse celebrity. I had some experience of this, not necessarily in being offered a spokesperson, but it verges onto the world of brand ambassadors. I've worked with some very minor celebrities over the years, including people from Love Island, and in my experience, these don't really work out. And it's mainly because those people don't necessarily use your products, and they're not willing to put as much effort into promoting as you really want them to. So the best kind of ambassadors for me are ones that already use your products or services, and they really care. Luckily at Paleo Ridge, we have built a great relationship with our ambassadors, and they're very valuable for us. But it's interesting to hear about the BBC having a rule of only one brand mentioned. But I think that's good to maintain the independence and balance, and I suppose their authenticity too. I imagine lots of people do try and take the piss. They get their 5 minutes of fame and try to bosh as many mentions of the brand as possible, trying to just turn the conversation around to be all about their brand. And Anna's mantra of showing not telling is definitely worth further consideration. I looked this up and found that this is a narrative technique used in various kinds of text to allow the reader to experience the story through actions, words, subtext, thought, senses and feeling, rather than through the author's exposition, summarization and description. So it's more nuanced and less direct. It avoids adjectives describing the author's analysis and instead describes the scene in such a way that readers can draw their own conclusions. That makes complete sense to me. It's similar to any type of communication, because if we just put together an advert that says, buy this because it's better than that, or just says, this is the best, how are we meant to believe that? Or we are really more likely to reject that, I think. If we hear the background stories and the surrounding arguments and perhaps see things for ourselves, then we'll be more accepting of the communication. And I love Anna's example of the Andrew Marr show with sausage dogs. Too much sausage and not enough dog. And that really does translate into marketing in a sense that it conveys exactly the issue that Anna's trying to convey in the most succinct way possible. And as marketers, we know that people are time poor and concentration levels aren't very good. So we need to put the effort in to make the messages more entertaining, easy to understand, but also convey the right message. I think that's exactly why companies employ people like Anna as spokespeople, because it's really an art when it comes to this. And I think it comes more naturally to some people than others. But as with any art, you can improve that with practice. And Anna works in the BBC and the wider media so frequently, she's bloody brilliant at it. It's interesting what Anna said about the relationship between PR and social media, because PR, at its most fundamental basis, is about company reputation. And social media has broken down the barrier between companies and consumers, whereas before social media, communications tended to go via mass media, like radio, newspapers, television, stuff like that. So back in the day, to be able to get your communication into these channels, you needed to do something that was newsworthy, which is where PR came in. So PR campaigns, PR stunts, depending on how you look at it, and that's what I mean by the hook. So obviously, if you want to get your communication into these channels, you need to come up with a campaign that would get that level of interest. But with social media, you can drip feed communications to contribute to your overall image and reputation. So that's a great perspective from Anna on that. I also mentioned propaganda, and it's a subject I'm really keen to dip into in a number of podcasts in the future, because it's such a controversial and sometimes scary subject. There's loads of theory involved in propaganda, and there's also so many examples of propaganda being used and its effects. But most people just think of propaganda being used in the Second World War, but it's been around for at least the last 300 years, or probably more. We've been exposed to variants of propaganda on an ongoing basis. I seriously can't wait to get into that topic. I think it's going to scare the absolute hell out of a few people. But how apt would that be, given that propaganda predominantly preys on people's fear to make them take action in a way that they otherwise wouldn't do? It was nice to hear that Anna doesn't hate marketers, but you can hear from Anna's response that her perspective on marketers comes from her position in the media. And as we'll cover when I do an episode on why people hate marketers, it's usually people from a consumer perspective that hate marketers or marketing. I love that Anna is a fan of Mad Men as well. My wife and I watched every episode, and although it was really about a bunch of guys drinking way too much and smoking way too much, the bits around advertising are really interesting. There's probably more relevance in the first season from a marketing perspective when you look at how the advertising agency were changing the way they were conducting marketing campaigns. And there's a book called The Real Mad Men, which is really interesting, and talks about the actual campaigns of the time, which are kind of reflected in the first season of Mad Men. And these changes included stuff like moving away from specification-based marketing, like saying this car has the fastest acceleration, to saying how this car makes you feel, concentrating on the feeling of driving the car that turns everybody's head. If you think about that from a marketing perspective, with all the research that we know about now, some other company would come up with a car that has a faster acceleration, and they can argue that factually that car is faster, and that appeals to people's logic. But when you talk about turning people's heads, it's more emotional and less logical, so it's harder for a rival company to objectively do that better. Then Anna said about having some amazing guests on a podcast that really boosted it from the beginning and probably set her momentum from the start. And I'm so thankful for the guests that have joined me on the podcast for this episode on podcasting. So I can only hope that it helps a bit with the momentum of the Marketing Made Clear podcast. I definitely take on board the advice from Anna that I need to work on my questioning when I'm interviewing people to be able to ask that short question that gets the long answer. In listening back to some of my interviews, I do think I have a tendency to be more conversational. So in the future interviews, this is something I can improve on. And what a quote from Anna to leave us on. She said, "Dogs are our main resource in keeping our humanity. So that is super profound and an awesome way to end this podcast. Thanks so much to Anna Webb. Don't forget to subscribe to her, to me, to everything, and enjoy the song one more time.
Marketing made clear, we're here to educate. From beginners to pros, we'll elevate. Bringing the insights like a blazing spark. Together we'll conquer, leaving our mark.